All right. Welcome back, my friends, in the Game Changer podcast. This time, again, an episode in English. I think it's my second or third episode in English. Yeah, I do it because I have a very special guest here. Welcome to the show, Rosie Popper.
Thanks so much for having me. So excited to have a good chat today.
Yeah, thanks for coming. First of all, this is something I didn't tell you before in the pre-talk, is that my sister actually has a very similar name in her, like, yeah, we also call her Rosie or Rose because her name is Rosanna. So, and your name is Rosemary, right?
Yeah, Rosemary. Nice. Very official, but Rosie for sure, but Rosie.
Rosie, cool. Rosie, you have been to the Tokyo Olympics and won a gold medal. So I'm not only speaking to Rosie Popper, I'm speaking to gold medal Olympic winner Rosie Popper.
That's good. That's, yeah, an absolute honor. I can't believe it's nearly 3 years ago now with the Paris Games coming up. So time moves super fast. But yeah, thank you so much.
Maybe we could start with this, like how did the gold medal at the Olympics change you or not? So what was from you maybe also expected from it, or what you wanted to achieve and you achieved it, and also from the feelings internally, how it changed you?
I think it's an interesting one. I think the gold medal itself represents, you know, like a 15-year rowing career, and I think for so many people, you kind of only see that for us 6.5 minutes. But I think it's what it represented to me was that 15 years of hard work. And I think in terms of, I'm sure we'll go through my rowing journey and lessons learned and everything. But for me, it really represents kind of like my dedication to especially that Tokyo Olympics with the COVID lockdowns. There was a lot of self-reflection and self-learning, and I really took the chance to make sure that I was doing everything properly and leaving no stone unturned, and really making sure I was like the best version of myself. And I think to actually have a tangible result with a gold medal at the Olympic Games was a real confidence booster for me, to know that to live authentically and doing what you need to do, and being okay to be doing things that people aren't prepared to do, mm-hmm. just has made me kind of reflect of going next steps into my career now and my studies now, that, you know, I'm okay to do things differently. And I know that working really hard and being really open and honest to feedback and being okay with the ups and downs that come with life is worth it. And even if you don't get that tangible result, it's making sure that you do the work and being authentic to you. So it's been a really cool feeling. I think Tokyo Olympics was such a funny one because, you know, we didn't get the big spectacle after the game. So in Australia, we had to go back to Australia the day after our final. So I think we finished on the Wednesday, and then we're off either Thursday night or Friday morning after our final, and then went straight into 2 weeks of hotel quarantine. And then I went back to my hometown in Melbourne, Australia, and then we had another lockdown until Christmas. So we didn't really get the big spectacle, the parades, or the big up that comes after that massive achievement. So it was kind of this diluted feeling of kind of that gratification. And I think now, looking back 3 years later, it's actually this kind of slow burn of really appreciating what I'd done, because I think we just had this incredible experience. And then it was like, okay, well, you're either going to row or you're going to move on now. And it wasn't really like that celebration. So it was definitely that delayed gratification, but I think it helped me stay really grounded, because it put into perspective that it was just about executing the task at hand, and it wasn't about the parades and all that kind of other stuff. So I think very different to any other sporting event, really. But I think personally for me, it's actually been a good thing of being okay to be really happy with that period of time. And not have that big high that comes with that super big low. And obviously we have ups and downs, but I think it made me stay grounded, I think. An amazing experience. And I feel so, so proud to have done it with three of my best friends who are, you know, they're still rowing now, and I wish them the best, but, you know, happily stepping aside and let the other talent come through now.
Amazing. Yeah. Cool. I mean, this is also already like, it's a very good perspective on it, because of course you could also say, oh yeah, what a pity it was the Olympics without spectators and everything. Mm-hmm. But you say, okay, it helped you keep grounded, it helped you to zoom out, maybe see it differently, and still being happy and still celebrating maybe on your own or with your family or friends. Mm-hmm. What you achieved.
Yeah, I think that's I feel incredibly lucky that I had the Tokyo experience with a very, very good result. And I think it would be very difficult to have that and maybe underperforming or, you know, not feeling very satisfied. So I really am so conscious that if I went around and was talking about how hard it was when I had the best case scenario, you know, we got an Olympic record and, you know, everything went to plan for my particular boat. So I think it's just being a good teammate as well and being a good leader in that space of understanding that there are some people probably still really struggling with that and, you know, not getting the result that they wanted, plus having to do the hotel quarantine and having to, you know, do 6 months of lockdown after and then maybe chasing their dream still. So, you know, I think that it's about having things in perspective, like you said, and zooming out and having the big picture that at the end of the day, going to the Olympics is, and in the sport of rowing, it's about going as fast as you can from point A to point B. Like, that's as simple as it is. And making sure that you do it and being a good teammate and a good leader along the way. So I think that's how I've framed it in my mind. Because I think I never want to look back and think about how hard it was. And obviously it was really difficult, but not how hard done I was, because there's a lot of other people in the world that are really, really struggling. And I had the luxury of still being able to have the Olympics go ahead. You know, there are a lot of competitions that have been cancelled. So to even have the opportunity to compete, I feel incredibly grateful for.
Absolutely. Amazing. And did you already know during the Olympics or even before that you would retire afterwards? Or did you decide that afterwards?
To go back a little bit, mm-hmm. I was on the Australian team. So I've rowed for both the US and Australia, but I was on the Australian senior team in 2015, and we didn't qualify the boat that year at the World Championships. And then in the lead into the selections for the 2016 Olympics, I broke my rib and was injured, so didn't actually make it past the selections. So I've kind of done the cycle and know what it's like to live without the sport. And I think that was actually a harder transition initially, where, you know, I probably hadn't done everything that I needed to do to put myself in a good position to qualify for mm-hmm. the Olympics. And I'd kind of had that, who am I outside of the sport? And then in 2016, that's when I did some traveling and I worked some and I think got some perspective. And then moving into the Tokyo campaign, I had in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm going to give it 150% and actually like not be sustainable. I don't want to think to Paris. I don't want to think to LA. Like, I'm going to go to the Tokyo Olympics and put all my energy in and really make sure I have nothing more to give after that. So I really squeezed everything out of those couple of years. Mm-hmm. So coming into the end of it, I think that I put my foot so hard on the accelerator that I'm like, I'm just going to go for it because I don't want to save myself here. And but to answer your question, so after the Olympics, and then I had a conversation with my coach, John Keogh, who was my coach for Tokyo, and he's still the head coach at for the women's program in Australia now. And he called me a week after the final and said, you know, what's your decision, Rosie? And I was still in hotel quarantine, and we have a really good relationship. So John, you know, I'm still sitting in hotel quarantine in a room by myself. I can't actually make a logical decision right now. And I said, I need a year to make my decision, because I think once you've achieved the ultimate, for me, it's really important and to know exactly how much effort and time and dedication it takes. Like, I don't want to just go back because it's something that I've done. I want to make sure that I'm a really big value add for the team. Plus, I'm really motivated to be there because it is such a massive commitment. So I actually took that year and was still, I hadn't retired or anything, was still kind of had my name on the books there, but they were really respectful in giving me that time, so I feel incredibly grateful for that by Rowing Australia.
Yeah.
And then a year to the day after the final, I got a call from John and our high performance director asking what my decision was, and I actually took kind of two more days and then I decided that if I was going to row, I would be down at the sheds and I would be getting fit and I would be prioritizing that. But instead I was prioritizing my career and prioritizing my social life and prioritizing getting to know who else, like who I was outside of the sport. And I think that I was almost not making excuses, but I just wasn't making it a priority. And I think, you know what it's like working in high performance sport. Like if you really want to do something, you're going to do it and you're not going to make an excuse for it. So I think because my actions weren't telling me that I wanted to be back, that's when I really knew that I was, that I was ready to retire. So I had a great conversation with John and we kind of had I think it was quite an emotional conversation. Because we just respect each other a lot. So yeah, I retired officially in 2022. But I think giving myself the bandwidth not to actually make a split second decision, especially in a really highly emotive time where you kind of have no, it was such a whirlwind of an experience for that last year of my rowing career.
I think that's the difficult part about, one of the difficult parts about retiring is like, you don't want to do it like too early. You don't want to do it. And then say after a year, like, I could have done a little bit longer. So, but this is what also led me into like a great discomfort because I was like, already could have retired early, like a year earlier, maybe when I had a kidney failure and everything went not so good and stuff like that. And like, there was already a door. I just could have gotten through it, but I didn't take it because I was like, there are still some percentages, maybe 2% I want to keep on. But then this 1 year for me was like the longest year in my career. And in the whole year, like at some point I knew, the decision is clear that after either I qualify or not for Tokyo, but afterwards it's I cannot.
Do you think though, if you'd retired the year before, that you would always be thinking, "Oh, what if this? What if that?" Like, I think
that's
there's
the question. Yeah, that's
the question. And I think so. There's something powerful in going, I made a decision to go through and being proud of yourself for that, because I think there's nothing worse than having the regrets of going, I could have done this, I could have done that, instead of going, well, you did everything that you could. And time you're in a position like that, would you actually go, am I doing this for the right reasons? Or, what's my motivation here? But I think that first, especially for us, like coming to the end of our career, like that's the first time in your late 20s or early 30s, it's the first time that you're actually like stopping this really big moment in your life. So we have no idea how to do it right. And no one really talks about like when's the right time to retire, because it's such an individual thing. So there's no, I don't think there's one right answer, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, there's no right answer. And that's actually a good question. Like if I would have said like, after a year afterwards, maybe see German 4, maybe qualifying or whatever, and then see, I could have been in that boat or something. But like in the moment when I decided it, I was very clear that I will try this last year because, it was just 1 year left. There were even like I did competitive rowing for 15 years, one year more or less. I thought, and I wouldn't have the chance to come to the Olympics, of course. And but the thing was, in that moment when I decided this, it was the right decision. So I will not look back and say, but afterwards, like, I was struggling mentally so much with the decision and everything that this was like a big shadow over all the rest, and
absolutely.
I had to pull that away again to see the positive things. And that took me quite some time actually after I retired to be able to see it positive. And also now what you said, like to be proud that I tried it and to be proud that I did my best and, tried to make it, even though if it didn't work out in the end like I wanted, but I gave it a chance. And
I think that is the thing that you need to be proud of, right? Rather than like, I think that piece of being like, you took a chance and knowing that.
Yes.
And I remember when I missed out in 2016 and I had a really cool conversation with someone who went to the Olympics in the pair in 2012, Brody Buckland. And he was like, you missed out, and that's the worst case scenario. And he goes, you still have an amazing family, you still have amazing friends, you still have like all these amazing opportunities, and no one actually judges you for having a go. Like, I think they respect you more for actually putting yourself out there. And I remember in that moment, like, if this is the worst case scenario, that's still pretty good. Like, it felt like it was forever. during that time, but then I look back and it was maybe a year, and like it, but I was just those lessons learned of actually taking the chance to do it and then come back, but thinking, oh, people are going to judge me because I didn't make it. But at the end of the day, no one, people are just proud of you for trying. And or if you were like, nope, this is my time to stop, people will also respect that too. But I think we're so conditioned to,
yes,
we're so conditioned to like look for that external validation rather than, yes, being like, no, I'm happy with my decision whether I go for it or not. And like that was a big thing for me when I retired in 2022. Initially, I was kind of thinking like, what should I do? And then I realized like it, the only person who's like, can I sit with whatever decision I make, whether it's considered a success or a failure? And I feel really proud of that because like I think of all the things that I do now, like, you know, job applications or trying out for different things or taking tests. Like there's ones that you're not going to perform on initially because we're learning this new skill now. And once we've had that, I guess, that experience of the failure or missing out or something, like it doesn't, you kind of had it, you've already got it out of the way where you know what it's like to be at that lowest point and you know how that you can get through it.
Yes.
And that's like the biggest thing for me now, being like, if I don't miss out, if I miss out on something, like, okay, well, I know it kind of sucks and it hurts a little bit, but I think it hurts because you care about it. And you'd hate to kind of feel numb and turn off the emotion of things because it hurts. Like I think to put yourself out there and being vulnerable is actually really powerful, and it's super human as well.
Absolutely. And also the achievements help you, I think, also to try new things. And
yeah,
like we said before already, when I told you a little bit about my own self-employment now, when I started, it was like, of course, it was hard also with the routines and everything, but mm-hmm. also like, okay, I had to learn so many new things. Like every week was so many new things. And in the end, in rowing, like the last years, of course, you do a little bit of technique here and there, but everything is the same, you know, you're like just used to it. You just do it and you just execute, and you know, that gives you a lot of comfort and confidence that, mm-hmm. you know, you're in a position where you know what you can do, you know what you are capable of. And then you come to a completely new field. And you're a complete beginner, but then you remember, oh, in rowing, I was already also a complete beginner. I didn't knew anything. I was not good at anything. And I also made it. So of course it will maybe take me a few years to become very, 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 very good. But nobody is rushing me. So, and that gives you, I think, also a lot of confidence, when you achieved something in sports. You can also do it in other fields in life.
Yeah. And I think it's just always keeping in mind that it will take time. You know, like to be good, like it always, like there's, it's going to take to, you know, for us, it took, we rode for the same amount of time. We rode for 15 years. So
we're coming,
if you're putting in a rowing analogy, like we're at learned a row program for adulting, you know, like we're kind of starting right at the start. Like I remember because I went straight into corporate after I retired and there's all these different things that, because I started when I was 29 or 30 and going like, you know, a lot of these people have been doing it straight after their undergraduate degree. So they've been doing it for 6-7 years longer than I have. Like, of course they're going to be better at this, or it's going to, you know, like I made so many, I was taking, like, it took me so much longer to do anything initially because I wanted to do it well, but also it's things that weren't automatic to me just yet. But then I looked back on, you know, a year later and think, and I was telling people or like teaching people how to do something that I had literally had never heard of a year before. So it's like, I think we just have to help keep in mind that it's just going to take time, and it's actually finding, to me, it's actually finding the humor and being like, you know, an Olympic champion who's learning how to do a PowerPoint slide deck and being like, I don't know how to do it, you know, and then thinking that's actually kind of funny. And then, but then knowing that, like, enjoying the fact that, like, our learning trajectory is like this. It's not like this anymore. And I always have the analogy that I, you know, like, I used to lift a lot off the catch and I used to go, like, quite into my shoulders. So I spent the last 1 year of my life, you know, just staying flat on my shoulders and making sure it's, like, that's all I thought about for a year. Like, you know, but, like, that's such a small movement. And then, like, and then going leaps and bounds. Six months later, and I think instead of being overwhelmed by how like daunting and but how quickly you're learning, actually embrace that learning again, because it's you know, and that's what I've loved about coming back to uni. So I'm at Oxford at the moment, and I'm completing my MBA. I've got a week left of classes, but it's actually been really cool to be a student again and learning something and actually taking the time to implement it and stress test it and actually think about things again, because I think for so long I was on automatic mode and just kind of doing rinse and repeat. And I think we also forget how tired we were as athletes, right? Like, you're just so exhausted all the time. So you don't have the mental capacity to learn at such a big rate. So I think it's those little things where you're tired in your brain because you're working for 8 to 10 hours a day or whatever, studying for 8 to 10 hours, but your physical body is like so used to being physically exhausted. So that was something, another thing that I've been learning so much about, like, I don't have to really punish myself when I exercise or anything now. It's actually like a stress reliever, and it's actually something that's a hobby of mine. And I think like that's what we're talking about, like how we kind of got to know each other a little bit, like identifying that piece between it's when does it go from training to exercise.
Yes.
And there's all those little things that no one really talks about. And when you're still trying to, you know, train full time, but then you're studying or working full time as well, like it's just so, it makes it really, really difficult. But yeah, it's kind of peeling an onion of retiring and moving away from sport, isn't it? Like, there's just so many things that you've never even thought of.
It's crazy. No, but the analogy, like when you said, like with the humor to just the Olympic medalist or going there. Yeah, I mean, it's
so funny.
I had it in a similar way also. So many people, when I got into this coaching world, like completely out of the high performance rowing world into like coaching, online coaching in Germany. Mm-hmm. And so many people were like, with your history as an Olympic rower, you can be quickly very successful as a coach and everything. And so many people saw the potential, but I was like, and then I saw where I was and I was like, you know, nice that you see it that way, but I cannot see it yet. You know, it's too far away from me. I cannot. And then I also really struggled with that. And then from time to time, like you said, it takes so much longer than you think in the beginning, feeling like, they all say it can be quick. Okay, I try to make it quick. And then you do it. And then like, oh, no, it doesn't work that way. I have to do it my way. And my way was like steady and just continuously working towards it. Mm-hmm. And now as I do it more that way, it works out and it's improving. And it's crazy. So to have this humor is quite a good thing, because then you can just laugh about it. I think laughing about yourself is also something I really started to learn the last years, because it gives you such a nice perspective on life. And when you can laugh about life, then you about yourself, then you, I think are in good position.
I think I love to think about, you know, for me, the thing is obviously we've been in such high pressure environments, and it is, not necessarily a coping mechanism, but I think when something is so hard, I think I was chatting to someone who was a rower a couple of years ago, like rowing is too hard not to kind of see the humor in it. Like, you have to have fun and you have to really enjoy it. And I think I used to take myself super seriously and like just be, you know, it was kind of like, I look back now, like it was almost painful. And then I think when something that actually helped me really learn this, like when the Olympics were delayed, and we couldn't row for the year, but then what my coach did is, like, you know, we had a non-rowing camp, so we went and actually learned how to, we did like a surfing camp that was kind of a team bonding, and even his lessons learned was going, like, because he was very, very serious, and he goes, I learned that I needed to like kind of be more authentic with the team as well and bring my humanness and bring a bit more humor and playful. And then sometimes, maybe if, you know, a 3x30 ergs on the cards, but everyone's exhausted and everyone's like, the morale's low and stuff like that. But when you actually make it a bit more fun and playful and maybe cut it down to a 2x30, but then do some team bonding, that's actually way more beneficial than just kind of grinding down and kind of losing all hope. But I think that really resonated with me, because I used to be like, oh, we've got to do a 20-something K. You have to do every single thing, which I think is super, super important. But I think it's, especially when we get to that top end of knowing exactly, like I think we both had a lot of injuries, illnesses. Like, for me, I used to really overtrain and overdo it so much, and I didn't know myself enough to go, like, where's that tipping point where I am taking it too seriously that I don't have it in perspective, and I would just end up getting really, really injured and really sick or really hurt instead of like backing off that little bit. So then when it was time to go, like I would never, like I tried to stay in the boat all the time. And I think those little analogies here, because then I think if you're working super, super seriously and you're working, like you're overdoing and trying almost too hard in the corporate sense or this new thing, you kind of don't, we lose the humor and the fact of you have to have that brain space to actually think, like, have I learned enough today? Like, do I need to just have a rest now? Instead of being like, I need to work X, Y, Z. So that's another thing that took me a while. Like, I was studying for an exam to get into the MBA program here. And I was trying to do all the study, but my brain was just so full. It was just like trying to fill up a cup that I was already full. Like no information was going in. And I was studying, but I wasn't retaining anything, which meant that I actually had to study for longer because I just didn't take a break and freshen up. And I think like those are little lessons that I think, yeah, we know how to work hard, but it's that self-awareness piece of knowing exactly what works for you. And for me, humor and playfulness and, you know, not taking myself too seriously and having other things that are going on outside of my work now are really, really important to me because I know they make me enjoy life so much more. Mm-hmm. But I think that also makes everything a lot more sustainable as well, instead of, you know, it's like being a good junior or do you want to be a good senior? Like, are you got a 5-year lifespan or 15? And that's something that my parents, like you were saying, like both our parents have rode. But that's something that my parents have really instilled in me, is making sure that, you know, you're thinking of things long term rather than what's good for right now, mm-hmm. which I think is really important.
And because you spoke about it, like taking it too far, you know, and I said, like with my kidney failure after a rowing erg test, I also used to take it so far sometimes. But now after you retired and a little bit time between, a lot of reflection, when you look back now into that, like getting into the pain cave, you know, all that stuff. What would you think, like, what are your reflections on that now? Like, is it like, maybe one question about like, what were you seeking in it? Like, why were you doing it? And also how you see it today, why you approach it differently.
Although like when I would go there, when we were rowing compared to now.
Yeah.
I think that it actually evolved over time. So I think when I was younger, it was kind of that pain cave because I probably wasn't like very content with who I was. And I was trying to like almost, I don't know, it sounds kind of dramatic, but I think that you kind of put yourself in a lot of pain to not hear what's happening in your own mind, if that makes sense, which it stemmed from a lot of...
Makes total sense.
Yeah, and I think it extended from like a lot of insecurity and I think like trying to prove myself and not really doing my internal work to kind of figure out who I was.
Yeah.
And then once I kind of worked through that, and then, you know, you can only put yourself through so much pain, and, you know, I would just pull really hard, but I wasn't technically, like I was technically good, but I wasn't doing the work to like be robust enough to be strong enough for the gym, that because I have really strong legs, but my upper body is naturally really weak. So I like wouldn't do enough work. That's like the boring connecting muscles of like the thing that you don't get, like you're not putting yourself in the pain cave, but are really important in rowing. Like I wasn't doing that properly. So I was doing all like the big kind of heavy stuff. And I could, that only takes you so far of when you're going really, really hard, but if your body's not structurally sound enough, it will break. Mm-hmm. And I think after my body broke a few times, I realized like, it doesn't matter like how hard you're going. Like if you're not doing it for the right reasons, like it's going to be, like that, it's going to be wasted effort. So I think I actually, coming into 2017, I worked on my physiology a lot. So I have a really high lactate threshold. So I can sit in that really high pain tolerance for a long period of time, just the way that my body is. But I didn't have that like aerobic capacity because I'd kind of conditioned myself to be in that high threshold. But I just had lost that like base training. Mm-hmm. So I spent 2017 developing that base, which meant that instead of my base being here and then the top end being there, like I made that base there. So the top end was there. So I was in that more sustainable pace.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just tried to make sure that I used, instead of going, okay, I'm going to go 150% of like ripping the oar, being like, okay, can I go 100% mentally and making sure that I'm actually feeling what's happening with the people around me? Can I... because it's not going to hurt as much for me because I have such a big pain threshold, if that makes sense. Like I know how to do that. So mm-hmm. I was like kind of challenging myself, being like, I don't want to rush. I don't want to like just rip the crap out of the handle. Like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be as like strategic and focused and dedicated to that technical mm-hmm. competence. So then when, and then make sure that like, I'm not just burning the candle from both ends, but when it's time to go in the last 200, when you really need to like go above and beyond, I knew I had that capacity to kind of change gears. So for me, it was like, how can I keep beating people when I'm at 80%? And then when they need to, I can squeeze on to 85 and then 90. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how I mentally did it, even though I think that made it actually a lot easier for me, because I wasn't like, you know, when you're in ergo tests and you're like halfway through a 2K, you're like, oh my God, can I do this? I don't know how I'm going to like get through this. But if you're like, oh yeah, I have somewhere to go. I know I've, you know, I'm kind of in a good rhythm on a good steady state, but I know I have somewhere to go. And I think it actually helps you stay mm-hmm. calm. Mm-hmm. So for me, I kind of deconditioned myself just to like hurt myself for the sake of it. Mm-hmm. And then now in terms of like, I don't really do any threshold or anything. So I think for me now, I just run, I walk a lot, I do yoga, and I've just started doing weights again, but I don't really do any thresholds training at all. And I think because, and that might change, but at the moment it's really, really intense with my studies. So, you know, my days are like, sometimes I have class from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 8:30 p.m. So to actually put more stress on top of that, and it's, you know, a lot of socializing, a lot of networking stuff that we're doing here, and to put yeah. on like a threshold session there to exhaust yourself so you can't do stuff that's opportunity while I'm doing this course doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, if things change, but at the moment I don't feel the need to like do any threshold sessions. So I'm very kind to myself now.
Yeah, the focus changed, and yeah. I think also the approach like towards yourself and your body and... Yeah. You don't have to put yourself too much into that, into that deep level. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, and then you already did it.
Yeah, so. I'm just like, well, I don't know. But then that's, you know, I think I've done a few half marathons, so I'll just do it, but it's like a social thing. So, you know, I'll do it with a few people from my program here, but like, you know, we'll kind of go do it. Like, we don't run together during the half marathon, but something that we go and do together, that's like a nice outing. But then yeah. I'll test myself a little bit there and be like, oh, if I can get around here, that'll be good. And I end up kind of doing better. And I feel really proud of myself for that. But I think that it's more for me, exercise and physical activity now, it's like a social thing of, you know, it's taken me a while actually to do any exercise with people, because I didn't want to like compare myself to other people. Like for probably a year when I started running, I only had the time on, like, I didn't know how fast I was going, because I didn't want to like be competitive, and I didn't want to like have a slow run, which would ruin my day, if that makes sense. Like, I wanted to make sure that the physical activity is really healthy, and it's going like not to just do it because you have to punish yourself. So that's my process. Mm-hmm. And I also have a really bad back, so I know if I overdo it, mm-hmm. my back and my legs kind of aren't right. So I have to mm-hmm. be really, you know, sometimes I do feel like you kind of want to have that little intense push, but then going, you know, why do I need to do that? And if I want to just like have a physical blowout, then I'll do it. But it's so rare now. But what about you? What's your process?
I mean, I also ask this question basically, I think, because I also see it that at some point in the process, I like unlearned like to, or not unlearned, that I could still do it. I could still go very deep into the pain cave, but I have not the need anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's, of course, also because I'm done with rowing and everything, but mostly probably because also of internal stuff with like, am I good enough? All that questions in your own mind where you have mm-hmm. to prove it. You have to go super hard. I was always the guy after 1,000 meters in the ERG test, I was already here, and then I still had to go further, you know? So I'm used to that, and I did it. But at some point I came to the point where I was like, okay, I cannot prove to anybody if I'm good enough or not. It's like, it's an internal thing. And it's an internal process to see yourself more positively. Mm. And I think for me, it started after 2016 already, after Olympics, because I made it there, but 12th place, very disappointed and everything. So I was like really down mentally. And there I started to look inside and to see, okay, there must be something more, because if you feel so bad after a defeat, like you feel like the worst person in the world, even though you're still an Olympian, what's wrong with you? Cannot be really, cannot be right. And that's why I started to look inside and to like also work with coaches, psychologists, start meditating and everything. And that brought me to that self-healing journey. And, and at some point also like the first years was good for rowing, or at least not bad, because then the first years afterwards were my most successful years with the world champion German 8, 2017 and 18. But then it got a little bit more like in the direction of, okay, questioning the rowing and my identity shifted. When you see it, things differently also in your change internally, you're still in the same environment, you see the environment completely differently, then it's at the beginning it's hard and you're confused, and that's what happened. And now I do sports just for fun, just for like because I like it. It gives me also mentally strength. I like to go to gym because I just like to do it. But I don't have the necessity, the need to push it, like push the boundaries and beat new, I don't know, new max rep goals or whatever.
It's hard though, isn't it? Because we're so conditioned to do that.
It was difficult to unlearn it and to learn it, to do it the new way. But I think it helps if you have a new focus. And my focus now, I think it was for me also part of the process, was that on my own journey, I developed and I discovered that the stuff I'm going through is like basically everybody has that in their mind, like this whole like the monkey mind who is always there, and like the subconscious and stuff like that. And of course, a lot of athletes are struggling with it. So I developed more and more and said, okay, so many, and it helped me so much to look inside and to work with it. Mm-hmm. That this new like little plant grow of a new why for me to give that on to other people here in my podcast, have nice conversations about it, and also to do the coaching and help people directly to overcome that stuff. And that also was the why was bigger than fast rowing, and then it was a very slow process of that growing. But then I came to the point that now the focus is different, and that's why it's also easier for me to not go into that other stuff too hard anymore. Yeah,
I think it comes from so much, like that it's like this self-worth piece. And I think it's like for me, what clicked was as soon as I realized like it doesn't really matter what people think of you, but it's about how you feel about yourself and knowing that you are enough. And I think that for me has been the biggest turning point of going like in relationships and in my job and anything else. Like I can't rely on someone else to give you that. And it's not about being selfish or that you don't need anyone. But I think if you're in relationships, like you can't just rely on your partner to make you feel good about yourself, because they have their own stuff as well. And I think it's knowing that you're enough with or without this thing. And I think that it's a big thing, especially in rowing, because I think, you know, where you want to feel like initially it's like you want to feel really needed, and you want to feel like, you know, this boat, the Olympic team will not go on without me. I think so much of us. But then it's like, you know, how do you be almost a good alumni to the sport and going, I genuinely wish, like I might not speak to all the girls or the boys every day, sorry, the ladies and men, but I think like I genuinely wish them all the best. And I think every single person that's at the start line, I think as people who are on the other side of it, we have to really just be supportive even from afar. And if that's
100%.
Letting them have their moment. But like, I think that's for me of going like, I know that I will never sit on the start line for that. And I know like you just have to, and I know how hard it is. And I think if there's something in putting whatever we've done to the side, whether that's a good thing, like the goodness that we've done to the sport, or if you've got some issues that's still working through it, but not put it on the next generation to come, because they're dealing with their own stuff as well. But I think it's also going, like we are part of this rowing community or the sport community or the Olympic community, but yes, it's just in a different way. And I think, like, I know I'm still figuring out where I sit within that, because there is no clear roadmap to that. And we're so used to being institutionalized of going, well, this is what X means. And then when there is no what good right way to do it, you do feel really lost. But I think it's just like knowing that it will take time, and knowing that you're enough with or without the sport, but you can still love it and not have to be there every day. Yeah. So.
Yeah, this is also a question I ask myself and also other people a lot, to like, okay, like this whole good enough thing, yeah, you know, if I'm really on a deep level, like good enough, and I feel it, then I also don't have the necessity to competitive sports. But I think, how can you combine it? Like, how can you be from a state of abundance and flow and enjoy, still be competitive, still be like chasing your boundaries? And I think it's quite a different, completely different angle where you can approach sports, and also life. And how I do it now, of course, I'm now retired from the sports, but of course I give that mindset also to the clients I work with. But what I do is now also in my business, because I think a lot of times most of the time in my career, I was acting from like a lack, like, okay, I'm here, I'm not good enough, I want to go there because I want to achieve it, I want to be better. And now in my business, I try to approach it from the way of, okay, I'm in a state of abundance, and it's everything is there in the field, you know, and I can just embrace it, the process to take it, to grab it, and to, of course, to spread it, because that's what it's about. And like you said, to bring it into the rowing community, to the younger people, because I see it now in my work, the problems in the minds of a 14 or 16 year old rower are the same than 10 or 20 years ago. It's like, it's such a big, big thing, big community, also in the minds of the people, that it's a long, 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 long process to change it. And we can help a little bit with our work to do it.
Totally. And I think something that someone said to me that was really powerful initially, because I think we're kind of, as rowers, you're kind of chasing that high, like you're kind of chasing that result and everything. And then something that unlocked me going, like, when I finally realized in the real world, you're not ever going to get that huge, huge high again that you get in rowing. Like when you get, you know, you win that race, or, you know, something, you get that PB or something, and it feels so, so good. And like, it is a feeling that you can't really replicate, because we're not working in that one dimensional way. And like, we have balance now, so you can't just put all your self-worth into this thing. And he goes, once I realize that I'm never going to get that high, but the meaning of everything that I do, and it's like that gratification, like, goes, the actual, what you're looking for shifts. And I thought that was so interesting, because like, you can chase this little short-term highs or whatever that is, but until you realize that, like, that actually doesn't exist anymore, but there is something that can give you a different type of satisfaction, a different type of thing. And that was a bit of a light bulb moment for me, because I'm like, I know that I will never feel what I felt on the Olympic final again. And initially I found life kind of boring, because I was like, oh, like, kind of going through it, and it's just not as exciting, or it's not as agitating. And I think that's what rowing is. It's like you're constantly agitating, where, you know, okay, I got a PB, but what if I did this? I would have gotten another second faster. Like, you're always chasing something, and then realizing, like, that's just not how the world works if you have so many things going on. And so I think it was just kind of being a bit more mature about it, and realizing, like, that phase of that intensity is gone. And I actually found that was unsustainable, and it was made me, like, always feeling like I had to perform, to actually going, now that's, I could move on and find another type of meaning, which I think has been really powerful. And I think it's, well, now, because I'm kind of still figuring out what I want to do long term, but what is something that makes me feel really fulfilled and makes me feel like I'm contributing, and like, those are the things that are really important to me now, rather than going, well, I just want to stand on the middle of the podium and get that, you know, 10 minutes of euphoria before I have to go de-rig the boats, and I have to go refuel, and I have to go get massage, and I have to stretch, you know, like all these other, you get like such a small period of time.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's, I mean, that's what works for me, and it's different for everything. I don't know what it's like to go and being a multiple gold medalist who's gotten, you know, 3 or 4 medals. Like, I can't identify with that feeling of, you know, defending your title because I didn't opt in for that. So, you know, I think that's something that someone else can, you know, probably speak for, but I can't say that that's, you know, what I did is the right for everyone, but that is what is authentic and right for me. So, you know, I will never be like, just because you got one gold medal, like, go, you know, you should stop, because that doesn't work for everyone. So it's just respecting those differences as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, but it's very interesting, like what you said. Of course, like the intensity changes, but I think, like, at least how it was for me, that also the kind of the meaning, of course, changes, or like the direction. And as you said, like, you question it, right? You say, okay, it's maybe nice to stand on the podium for 10 minutes, having a completely feeling of joy and all your whole body, every cell is like dancing and ooh.
Yeah.
but I think, of course, these moments are, I think in some ways you can still have it in life. I mean, when you, I don't know, you marry, you get a kid, or whatever can happen in life, and you still will have crazy moments also in your job. But I think what's more important is to, like, to embrace, like, this journey, this up and down. And when you're up, you say, okay, nice, cool, I can feel it. But maybe I'm not so enthusiastic about it anymore, but I can still feel it, embrace it. But when I'm down, I can also go through the emotions and just accept it as it is, and know that it will be better. And yeah, like, to embrace this flow. And to be in more in the position of as I see it, like, you're in a roller coaster, but you're in the seat and you enjoy just up and down, and not, like, always wanting to just be up and never be down, because you can, that's not how life works.
No.
And even sports.
Yeah. And I think it's naive to think that. And I think, it's been such an interesting process as well, because I think, like, for both of us, we've come out of such, you know, probably had the biggest high and the, you know, one of the biggest lows that we've had in our life, and you're moving on to the different things now. So I think the first time that happens, it's really kind of scary. But then knowing, like, that it just does take time. So, you know, I still have ups and downs, but, like, it's kind of saying, like, my ups and downs used to be like this, and then it's kind of coming like that. But then I think, like, I almost initially was numb to the highs because I was, you know, so tired all the time. And I think especially, like, into Tokyo, like, I look back and I had such a subdued reaction. Like, I remember when I crossed the finish line, like, I just started crying. Like, I couldn't stop crying. Like, I didn't put my hands up. I didn't stand up, and I just broke down and started crying. It was almost like this massive sense of relief that, like, you know, things actually did work out. And I was like, oh, it was such an odd reaction in my mind, which makes sense. But, like, it was just this release of emotion because I'd been holding on for so long because there was so much uncertainty with the Olympics. There was, you know, how many times we were told that the Olympics were going to go ahead, and then the stresses of actually performing, and two of the girls in my boat were also doubling up in the pair, and then their semi-final got changed to after our final, and then we had a typhoon that came through the day. You know, it's like all these things, and you have to just try to, like, be really calm and consistent and not do those in really big moments. And then when the big moment came, like, it was just like this release of emotion, and it was like, it was like, oh, okay, it was kind of this primal response. But I was like, oh, that's, you know, if I could go back again and going, I had that, like, that, you know, 10 minutes of after, I wouldn't think of, like, I would love to just, like, embrace that moment and celebrate and hug my friends and, you know, still all that. But, like, at that time, I just released emotion, and I can't, and then, you know, I kind of went into logistical mode of, like, okay, well, we've got to get the boat off the water, blah, blah, blah. And, like, because you're so conditioned to next, 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 next. And I think biggest learning from that was, like, okay, when those big moments happen, whether good or bad, and I think in meditation and mindfulness and yoga teaches you really well of, like, having that delay in response of, okay, you've felt that trigger, like, you have that moment of reflection before you do respond, and just kind of giving yourself that you don't need to rush through those moments. And that's what I'm trying to do now, of that gap between stimulus and response, and just soaking in before. So that's been my biggest learning, was going, I just kind of rushed through the standing on the podium at the Olympic Five because I was kind of overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
Instead of just soaking it in and really celebrating that moment of what we did. But you know what? I can't change it now. So, you know, I can just learn from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this is also a process in life, like to become more present, to get more into the present moment, like the gap between like, yeah, the trigger and the response. Yeah, it's a long, 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 long process. And I think if you can learn it, you can get better. But if you don't practice it, then you get lost. And so it's totally. It's a constant yeah game where you can improve and get better, but also play a little bit with it and get used to it. And I think in rowing I was also not really 100% always thinking about that. I mean, after 2016 when I was like not knowing if I would continue, but then a year after I became world champion, this was also something I was standing there and like, whoa, oh my god. And I could enjoy every moment of it because like, yeah, you know, it was a bonus, it was like I was free, I was like, oh my god, everything now, I just enjoy it. And that helped, you know, that to be down before helped then to enjoy it more and to be present there and soak the emotions up. But yeah, in every moment you can try to be present and enjoy it. And it doesn't need to be that you, when the person hangs you a medal over, it can also be when you just sit somewhere on the bench looking into the nature or
exactly.
Yeah.
And I think what you said was really good. Like everything, like it's not just sport, but all these different skills take practice. So like being present takes practice, like having the gratitude takes practice, or knowing that, you know, being patient. And that's the biggest thing for me of learning, like, okay, well, you do have to practice these things. So like, I don't know, if you want to spend less time on Instagram, like you have to practice not checking your phone first thing in the morning. Like those little things, you know, things. And it's like creating those new positive habits, but knowing that in practice, like in training, you're going to make mistakes, you're going to not PB every day, like it's not going to be perfect every time. And I think that's why people kind of don't stick to habits sometimes, is because you think, okay, if I don't get it right straight away, you know, then it's a failure. Instead of being like, okay, well, you know, I was really mindful and I journaled every morning and I did all these things right. But then there was one day that the first thing I did was check in, I scrolled for an hour, and then that ruined my whole day and blah, blah, blah. And then they stopped doing the mindful. Then it's like, okay, well, that was one day. That means you start again tomorrow. And I think that I think the Sam Harris podcast and his apps are really good because he's all about like starting again and making sure that you just like with new habits and stuff, like if something bad happens, you go, okay, well, let's just start again. And I think it just helps ground you a little. And I think about that a lot. Like if I ever get, because I have such a big capacity, because when you've been in such a high pressure environment so long, like you just learn how to get a lot of stuff done. And I know when I'm doing two things at once and I kind of get ahead of myself, I can just kind of rush through things, or I can just make silly mistakes. And instead of being like, oh, like I told myself I would slow down, and be like, well, you start again. And then you just like take the time. So that's been my biggest thing that I've just taken, because I think it just helps you not be as hard on yourself.
Yeah. What was for you, like, first question to that is like, what was for you the point where you started to look deeper into the meaning of things? Because as I said, like for me, I was after Rio, definitely, where I was down so much. But did you have like a certain point or certain situation in your career? Or was it like just that it came?
I think it was kind of an iterative process. So I probably started doing, I used to kind of just do exercise for exercise and kind of did a lot of overtraining and stuff, especially in my undergraduate degree. I went to California Berkeley for my undergrad, so I was on the team there, and I got really, really injured, and I couldn't break 7 minutes. Like it was just like I was just getting in my own way. And then I started doing yoga in probably 2012, and then I think I learned all the thing of like, you know, recovery is just as important as working hard. And then like I kind of started doing yoga just for the stretching, but then it was actually stopping for the hour and like reflecting and And I think like the biggest thing that I was like, you know, you're in a yoga pose and then you fall out and then you're not hard on yourself. You just kind of get back up and start again. And like, you just laugh it
and
off.
Don't compare yourself to the others in the class.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think from something that just started from, like doing yoga because I wanted to stretch because I was getting injured to actually like all the psychological benefits to that.
Yeah.
And then I think I was learning it and so kind of still figuring out. And then, you know, from that, then I broke 7 minutes and I think in my senior year there, I got like the most improved award or something like that because it was like I started to see results and then came back to Australia and was in the senior team and was like, that was a whole other level of training in terms of intensity. And I had to move from a different, you know, it was like a lot of political stuff going on. And I think I like kind of had to relearn the lessons again of, you know, not take yourself too seriously, but then I didn't quite get it right because it was in this new environment. And then I think when I didn't make the Olympics in 2016, I was like, okay, well, this is definitely not working for you anymore. Like, well, you need to do things really, really differently. And I think I made a promise to myself, like, I no matter what happens, I want to be proud of myself for this go, but I'm just going to do things differently because the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and getting the same and getting a different result or thinking you're going to get a different result. Like, so I think the 2017 when I really kind of was like, okay, well, you're gonna do what you're good at, but you're also gonna start working on things that you're not as strong about, and that means letting go of your ego and being okay to not come first at all these things, or you know, like there was all these things that I just decided to do differently, and that in itself, as like the campaign went on, there was all these different learnings, and you know, it was me balancing my rowing and stresses and all this other thing, and you know, I made mistakes along the way and didn't get everything right in my personal life and my, you know, rowing professional life. But like, you kind of keep learning on the way. And I think in the last kind of few months, everything really clicked. And I think everything was going really well. And I just felt, you know, me and my teammates had, on the women's four, we just created a really amazing foundation of trust and support. And I think from that, what we created was that we all knew exactly why we were in the boat. We knew exactly what we brought to the boat, but we also exactly knew what we needed from each other. And we worked really hard on like not just meshing physically, but also like emotionally and supportively, but also like it was really well-rounded and we kind of knew exactly what we were doing. So I think that it was kind of this journey from, you know, probably from when I left Australia in, you know, 2010, to actually executing and knowing exactly like all the lessons and can kind of put it into place, you know, 10, 11 years later. So it did take time, but it's, I think it was kind of like what I was saying before of, you know, you kind of just try to start again every time that you make a bit of a blunder. And there's going to be times where you make, you know, bigger blunders than smallers, but it's it just takes time in my opinion. And that's what I'm trying to do now of going, okay, well, like it's going to be a similar, how do I learn the lessons in a shorter period of time now and make sure that, you know, I keep kind of just continually learn and being open to thinking about things in different ways.
Yeah. You said yoga was like one of the icebreakers for you. What I think practices or other people are influencing you now the most right now?
So I think, like being in this environment at the moment. So with my course, there's 340 people on my course and they're all from, you know, 65 nationalities and all different industries, but everyone, you know, is high performers and everyone has done amazing things in their life. And also Oxford in itself is, it's a really amazing place of like high performing academia. And I've never been in an environment where like being a sport person isn't considered like the cool thing, if that makes sense. Like being an academic is like the jock version of it. So I'm just trying, it's such a funny little like environment to be in here, but I'm just trying to like really be open-minded and inspired by people around me. And it's only kind of recently that I've really reconnected back with the sport community. So I don't know, I've spent a lot of time kind of figuring out, you know, what do I like outside of work and everything. So, you know, I do like starting to, you know, do weights again and starting to do a bit more yoga again because I'm just like having really good practices. But the nature of this program is that every week our schedule changes and every week, like we're kind of set up an environment where you can't actually do everything because it's so intense. Mm-hmm. And you have to like really prioritize your like what you're doing and knowing that like, you know, you have to make decisions. So I'm really just trying to throw myself into this environment, and like it is so different to anything that I've done before. But it's actually like making sure that I like if I get overwhelmed or kind of need a day to myself or anything, taking that rather than continually doing what I think I should be doing. So that's kind of what I'm doing now. And I think when I finish this degree, I'll look for having like the routines again and get my like be able to go to yoga all the time and stuff like that. But I'm kind of just doing everything that I can at the moment to kind of making sure that, you know, I'm getting the most out of this environment and knowing that, you know, we've only got a few weeks left. So So to answer your question, there's no mm-hmm. routine, but it does change day by day. And like mm-hmm. even developing that way of knowing that like even when things are really fluid, mm-hmm. that you can kind of still have your own little coping mechanisms, even though it has to change every day. Like that's just that what needs to be done in this environment, and that will be different in 2 months' time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, like with this cultural like exchange, also with so many people from different cultures coming together.
It's amazing.
I can imagine it's that. It's like traveling around, but you're just on the same place with people from all over the world. So
it's actually like I've never been in such a multicultural environment before, and I think I've learned so much. Like we're put in teams for group work here with people from every different part of the world. So learning how to work in team dynamics where like culturally it's really, really different has been such an amazing learning experience. And I think because I knew how like my process worked, but then to actually not make any assumptions that that's how other people do as well. Like, and communicating the way that you work in teams as well, I think is super important. And that's been probably one of my biggest learnings as well. Like, mm-hmm. oh, this is how I've interpreted this situation. How are you interpreting that to actually get on the same playing field with people from different environments? So it's been super, super cool. I just have learned so much, and I feel like my world has kind of cracked open to truly understanding the value of like what we do as athletes, but also mm-hmm. having so much respect that, you know, there are people doing equally, if not more amazing things in other industries as well, and celebrating that as well, because I think in sport, you can be really insular in seeing what it is in the rest of the world. So it's been a very cool experience for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think it opens your focus to seeing more variety of things.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't even begin. I'll need 6 months to kind of come down from this experience because it's insane, but it's so incredibly wonderful. Cool. So I do recommend, I think, you know, one big thing for people coming out of the rowing world is to really get out of your comfort zone in terms of like challenging every assumption that you've ever made, but also figuring out like what works for you as well, and understanding that you do have a place in the world outside of rowing. Because I think that sense of community that you lose initially in rowing is really hard. And I think that knowing that you can still play in the rowing world and still be part of it, but you also have to know that there's a big world out there as well. It's super, super important.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Cool. And now the out view for you is like you will finish your studies and then you will just do this internship. And then let's see what will come.
Yeah. So I have, so obviously the Olympics is coming up in a few weeks. So I think just kind of, you never know how, like I've never watched the Olympics not wanting to be there, if that makes sense. So
would you go there?
I don't think so. Okay. I'm not too sure just yet because I am only, you know, an hour away. But I have my internship as well that I'm about to start. But I think you never really know what you're going to feel watching it. So I'm just making sure that, you know, I feel like I'm in a really good place, but I also want to be sensitive to the fact that, you know, I only retired 2 years ago, and making sure that I don't like assume that I will be fine, if that makes sense. So I just want to like kind of get to a point where I can watch it, and I genuinely feel like I can watch it and be really supportive of people. But I don't want to like, you know, pretend that maybe things don't, you know, will come up. But so then, yeah, I'm in the UK until the end of September, and then doing some traveling and going home and just kind of starting again and reframing what that looks like. So trying to be really kind to myself to the end of this year of just finishing this really intense experience, watching the Olympics, which will be, you know, really emotional in a really, hopefully a really positive way, is, you know, being really proud of your teammates and all Australians and athletes. And then taking the time of where I want to be in my career as well. Like I don't want to rush through the next step, because I think it's, you know, I'm nearly 33, and I want to make sure that my next step in my career is really strategic in terms of placing myself in a really good position. So I think knowing that's just going to take another few months and to go home and reconnect with my family and friends as well is really important to me as well.
Yeah, I can understand. Nice. I wish you all the best for that.
Thank you so much.
All right, coming to the end of the episode, as I said in the beginning, my podcast is called A Game Changer. Mm-hmm. And most of my listeners are from sports, a lot of young people also. So my last question is, like, what are your three game changer tips for my listeners, for my audience?
Game changer tips. I would say one would be, like, really challenging yourself to have, like, something that you really care about, like rowing or sport, in context of the rest of your life. So I think being, like, knowing what you're good at, but understanding that having balance and having, like, sense of identity outside of your sport, actually, like, maybe question the idea, like, that might actually help with your sport, because it helps you kind of have that balance and appreciate what you're doing is amazing. And that was a big game changer. So I think, like, yeah, questioning, like, do you have that balance, and do you have that support network around you, and do you have that sense of worth outside of the sport, would be one.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I would say, like, have a look at the way that you're going about your training, and if you're not getting the results that you want, like, instead of maybe looking at what blaming other people in the environment, have a really big self-reflection of what you're doing and what can you control to change that narrative or change that training, and can you identify what you need to be doing differently to, like, within all your control, can you kind of start to progress in that way? I think sometimes it's really easy to look outward and say, like, oh, I lost my seat race because, you know, I got screwed over by experts. Like, what can you actually do in the lead into that seat race to make sure that you win the seat race? And then three, how can you be, like, a better teammate, and how can you bring up people around you in a highly competitive environment? I think that's a really big one, because I think if you can create an environment that is the best in the world and you're still on top of that, that pretty much ensures that you're going to be making a really good impact. So I think as you're getting, you know, older and developing, like, what can you do to bring people up with you to make sure that you all succeed as well?
Nice. Yeah, I like that one.
Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you very much. It was a very interesting episode. I enjoyed it a lot. And thanks for being here. And yeah, if you want to spread some last words to my audience, apart from the three game changers, then go ahead.
Yeah, I think something that Max and I were talking about before we started this was, you know, how can people in the rowing community or sport community help each other out? And I think that's something that's what I'm really passionate about at the moment, is, like, how can we share our stories and help each other to kind of be the best versions of ourselves? So I hope this podcast or this video episode has been motivating of how can you kind of, you know, help each other out in communities as well and look after each other, because I think that as athletes and high performers, it's easy to feel like you're on your own, but there's actually a lot of people out there that are feeling the same thing.
For sure. Nice. Thank you, cool. Rosie.
Well, thank you so much,
and
Max.
Thanks for everybody who listened. See you or hear you next week. Bye-bye.
Ja, ist doch alles gut. Beruhig dich. Geht ja bald weiter. Die neue Staffel Iswas Dog ist doch bereits in der Mache. Kleinen Augenblick Geduld noch und dann gibt's hier wieder Geschichten über gute und schlechte Hundstage und natürlich Tipps von unserer Expertin Melanie Lippisch für eine harmonische Mensch-Hund-Beziehung.
Iswas Dog mit Malte Asmus. Jetzt bewerten, abonnieren und weiterempfehlen.